Sound of Hockey episode 282, we're calling this one the Adam Larson episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Adam Larson, in his first two seasons as a Seattle Kraken, had two 82-game seasons. And okay. He just had a little one. But the streak was broken, right? That's kind of a bummer.
A little one, meaning a child.
A child,
he
yeah.
just had a child. Yeah.
What else do you think I was talking about?
You said that in a weird way, but... Well, I knew what you meant, but somebody might have been confused if they didn't understand that context, so I thought we should clarify. But yeah, Adam Larson, you're right, he is a proud new papa. He did a little media thing yesterday or 2 days ago, and it was classic Adam Larson funny. No one knew. I think this is classic Adam Larson right here. Everyone knew that he was out of the lineup because his wife was very close to giving birth, but then nobody knew, like, when he came back, if the baby had been born, like... We weren't really sure.
Right.
So then we went into the media thing and everyone, I actually didn't ask any questions on this one, but the questions that were asked were pretty funny because it was like, so how was it being away from the Kraken? And he was like, well, pretty good, to be honest. And then it was like, everyone kind of laughed and I was like, is everyone okay? And he's like, oh yeah, everyone's happy and healthy. The baby's great. And I was like, okay.
Well, and usually the Kraken announce it on social media, right? And they didn't. So maybe based on guidance from Adam.
I don't know. But then he was pretty forthcoming. I mean, he said the baby's name is, I think, Alba. He also said that, nope, not gatito. That would be little cat in Spanish. I don't know why it would be in Spanish. But he said that, you know, somebody asked him about the name, like, oh, how'd you come up with that? And he's like, I wasn't really involved in that. So... He's just a funny dude. He's so, like, dry. So, anyway, this is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown at Darren Fun Brown on the X, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL 2 Seattle on the X.
And Curtis Izaki. Hello, Curtis.
Hello, everyone. Deep Sea Hockey on the X.
And we are coming to you remotely from Deal With It Studios on this particular occasion. Very rare that we come to you remotely, but this is Curtis's fault. He's on vacation in, where are you? You're in America's dingus, right? Down there in the southeastern.
Yeah, I'm in the southeastern quadrant of the United States. School vacation.
School vacation, okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, I hope you're enjoying you're in some sort of creepy garage, which looks nice, but it's that plywood wall, the plywood that makes it.
It's a little creepy. It's the area of the house that you have to have around here where if the floodwaters come through, nothing too essential is damaged.
Nice. Everything's raised.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Well, definitely a good place for you to bring your electronics for podcasting. So
indeed.
We have a review and I think I'm going to save it though, because there's a funny thing in this particular review requesting a specific song for outro. And it so happens that I know the song very well, and I'd be happy to sing it, but I think it needs to be done in studio. It feels important that we do it in studio. So I'm going to save it for next week. But do leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. We'll read it on next week's show. Follow us at @sound_hockey on Twitter/X. Follow us at Sound of Hockey on Instagram and on, TikTok. And subscribe for the podcast. Anything else that I need to
just the website
say? Oh yeah. Join the Patreon
website.
Yeah. soundofhockey.com and join the Patreon if you haven't before. We always are putting out some cool stuff on Patreon. We do mailbag episodes. We won't have one this week, but I think we'll probably have one next week.
Yes.
Some other stuff. So okay, that's our housekeeping. Let's talk Kraken hockey, because we are in fact technically a Kraken podcast, Kraken centric, but we talk about other things if it's your first episode. You think there's anybody listening to the first time for the first time?
That's a good question. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you are, identify yourself. Let us know. I think every now and then we probably pick up some new listeners. It's probably weird to jump in at episode 282, though, right? Because we have a lot of ongoing bits and jokes that...
The crows might have thrown them everybody off.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that we had a pretty big dip in listenership at that point. So I blame the crows, though, not myself. There's been 3 Kraken games since we last recorded. One of those was a kind of an ugly loss to the Kings. The Kraken just looked kind of outmanned on this one. You know, just the Kings are just a pretty good team and Seattle is just not really there. It's interesting that whenever the Kraken seem to be playing these lower bottom feeder type of teams, they've oddly played so many games recently against Anaheim, San Jose, Arizona. That seems to be like the only teams that they're playing. But then anytime they've played good teams, you know, Dallas, Los Angeles, anybody like that, they seem to not really be on the ice with them. So in this one, I thought it was kind of like that. They did get a couple goals in the third period to at least have a little bit of life, but they never really were in this one, I didn't think. And they did, you know, at the beginning of the game, I think it was one of those where they kind of like kept shots to the outside and whatever, but they couldn't create anything offensively for a lot of this game. I know the Kings are known for their neutral zone trap 1-3-1 setup that they do. But Seattle just didn't seem to be able to break through it at all that night to create anything. And like halfway through the game, I remember there was like some ridiculously low number of shots, right. Like 8 shots, yep. Or something like that. So yeah, it was one of those games, you know, they looked outmanned, outgunned, outnumbered, and outplanned. That's not the lyric. I had it in the wrong order, but
I gotcha. Yeah.
That's that. Any other thoughts on this one, gentlemen?
I mean, the 1-3-1 is, you know, maybe kind of over talked about at this point, but I do think there's something to the notion that, you know, it forces the opponent needs to make quick decisions and move the puck up the ice quickly, play with conviction, play with speed. And when you're eliminated from the playoffs, maybe going 90-95% speed, you're kind of playing right into that trap. You know, you're not really kind of going to break through it in the way you need to. So I wonder if, you know, the 1-3-1 is particularly effective against a team that's, you know, not playing as crisp or as fast as you would like to see. The Kraken didn't have anything this night. I thought Tanev in particular seems to, you know, he did finally score a goal here, but it just seemed like the puck is just won't stay on his stick. He's been struggling a little bit recently, I think, mm-hmm. Before the goal at least.
Yeah, he did play well in the last game against Arizona, but yeah, yeah. I agree. He's been a little, I don't know. But yeah, that 1-3-1, I don't know if all of our listeners understand what we're talking about. I know Allison and JT did an incredible breakdown of it on a broadcast a while back, but effectively what it is in the neutral zone, you know, if the puck goes deep into the zone, the Kings don't send any forecheckers into the attacking zone. They stay in the neutral zone, and other teams do this, certainly. The Kraken do this on certain occasions, depending on the situation. You'll see scenarios where they just kind of hang out and let the opposing team come out in a controlled breakout, waiting for both teams to change lines, get set up, etc. And then the idea is that the other team's going to come out with speed, but the first guy, the one, is at the first blue line, and he's effectively splitting the ice. So you have to choose which direction to go. Are you going to go to the right or the left? And then the three guys are there to try to trap the next one and push him into the boards and get him to turn it over or dump the puck in or ice the puck. So you're just trying to eliminate any controlled entries into the zone. And there were almost none. I mean, Seattle just could not create any. The way that you, to your point, is, Curtis, to break through the trap or through the 1-3-1 is you have to execute on quick passes through the neutral zone coming with speed. And Seattle just didn't look like they had it, right? You know, a lot of times you hear teams talk about playing fast, looking fast, and the way they do that is by executing and making quick passes, knowing where each other is on the ice without even seeing them, and that just didn't seem to be happening on this particular night. So that's our 1-3-1 chalk talk. The next game they played was against the Ducks, and this one was a fun one because this was Shane Wright's big night. He had 2 goals and an assist. Thought he had a hat trick very briefly when he made his pass into Matty Beniers, and it hit off Beniers' skate. Initially, I actually thought it had hit off a Duck skate, which would have meant a hat trick for Shane Wright. Instead, Maddie gets it, and Shane Wright ends up with a 3-point night anyway. So that was pretty fun to watch. I don't know. I just really enjoyed seeing that. I know, you know, it's against the Ducks, but it was pretty cool to see.
I think the Ducks actually looked a little bit better than the last time we saw them up here. Like, it was more of a competitive game. That's all I'm going to say. Not that it's still the Ducks, right? But yeah. It wasn't as pushover game that was in Seattle, but yeah, that was awesome. You know, that's kind of what we're watching for right now, or at least excited about. You know, I still want to see him win, but if Shane can get hot and get a taste of what we might expect from him next year, that'll be fun.
Just outrageous that we've gone this long talking about the Ducks game and did not mention that Cale Fleury finally got into the game. What does the man need to do? He finally got to play. Come on.
That's a fair point. I mean, it is funny how many times He went, well, obviously. Yeah. It is funny, though, how many times he went, you know, up and down between Coachella and Seattle this season and never got into a game. That's kind of insane. And I think about specifically the one that boggled my mind the most was trade deadline day when they called him up, made him actually fly into Seattle. He practiced for morning skate. And then even before the game, he was already sent back down. So there were a bunch of those.
He might have been sent down like on his way back to the dressing room that day. It was, yeah, it was rough stuff.
And they had him out as like the healthy scratch. You know, they kind of bag skate the guys that are healthy scratches after morning skate. So he got to go through that process, like the extra time on the ice. And then he got sent back down.
And so we talked a little bit, you know, Cale Fleury had been up and down on these emergency recalls. And we talked a little bit about why that was the case. We kind of knew behind the scenes that, you know, Adam Larson might, you know, have to leave on a moment's notice. So that was kind of the reason why Cale Fleury was hanging around and was kind of the justification for the recalls. But it was just kind of funny. But at the end of the day, I'm glad he finally got into a game. He's back down with Coachella Valley now and is probably there for the rest of the run. But of course, you guys rightfully focused on Shane Wright. You know, I thought both of his goals were kind of, you know.
Wait.
Yeah, sorry.
Before you shift back to Shane Wright.
Yeah.
I also want to say that Cale Fleury played really freaking good in this game.
He did. He did.
He was genuinely really good. Like, there were a bunch of times where I saw him walking the line on the blue line, making a nice pass, making a big hit. He, like, blew up. I think it was Isaac Lindstrom who tried to, like, drive the net. He got blasted by Cale Fleury. Like, he played really, really good. And actually, Hextall called him out after the game. You know, because I think who left this game early? Was that Dunn?
Yeah.
Somebody left early from this game, maybe.
No, Dunn didn't play, I don't think.
No, I think you're right. Anyway, he called out. He was like, yeah, or maybe the question was something about just playing without Vince Dunn. But, you know, the Hextall called him out as playing really well. And I agree. I genuinely thought he looked very good. And it's a reminder that, like, he's totally a reliable NHL defenseman. And he played a bunch in his rookie year, but he's just, you know, he's just in that spot where he's just a little, probably a little too good for the AHL and not quite good enough to make it as a full-time NHLer, at least with the Kraken. So, yeah, interesting. But he's in a good spot. I think, Curtis, you and I were talking about it, that, you know, he's getting paid the same amount either way and probably a little bit more because he's spending his time in the AHL. He doesn't have to put as much into escrow. So, yeah, it's, you know, he's making a good living playing in Coachella Valley and racking up some frequent flyer miles too. So
yeah, he's got another year on his deal. He might be in this same situation again next year. Who knows? I'm sure as much as he loves Coachella Valley, he'd like to be in the NHL. It's possible. We'll see kind of how the roster shakes out for next year. But I agree with you. I thought he looked pretty good. He's got, you know, some more runway to make the case for himself here as the Firebirds move forward. But so I guess just quickly
on Shane. I have more thoughts.
Yeah.
I have more thoughts on what you just said, but I'm going to put a pin on that.
Yeah.
So that's been pinned. John, I know you're not in the studio to grab the pin board to put a pin in this.
But you
so
got
everyone
it?
Mentally, okay. I hope so.
Okay,
Curtis, go ahead. Talk about Shane Wright.
So his two goals. The first one was just kind of off a face-off. He went right to the front of the net and a deflection in. It's kind of, you know, the type of thing we've been really asking this team to do more of, right? Just get to the front of the net. Good things can happen. It kind of shows you that when Shane Wright is on his game, that's what he likes to do. He likes to go to the front of the net. It's just a really great executed play. You know, it's a low probability play, but it's, you only can convert if you're really getting to those hard to get to places, and he's willing to do that. And then the second goal that he got was a feed, I think, from maybe Jaden Schwartz behind the goal. Is kind of a classic Shane Wright play. He loves to kind of have his wingers get the puck below the goal line, and then he sets up right in front of the goal for a one-timer. I've seen him do this dozens of times, from juniors to the AHL to the NHL, and he just can execute that play. That could be a goal, that type of goal, you know, you hope Shane Wright is getting 10 of those a season, you know, at least. That's his play. It was classic stuff from him. And both, I mean, if you were to look at those two goals on a, you know, on a shot chart or something like that, they're right low slot, like the types of shots the Kraken just don't get when they're not going well. And so all of that is to say that, you know, I think we all like what we're seeing from Shane Wright. He could be a big part of kind of curing some of the issues that this year's team had moving forward. That's the hope, at least.
It's interesting you mentioned that second goal. Yes, that is kind of the Shane Wright special, but I think, John, you've called this out before too, that one of the attributes to Shane's game that make people excited about him as a future scorer in the NHL is his ability to get the puck off his stick quickly, right? And I think that it was almost a detriment to him earlier on his earlier call-ups where he wasn't quite patient enough. He'd get the puck and he'd just like slap it somewhere rather than take a second. On this, I think what makes him look so different on this call-up, aside from the fact that he's got that pop in his skating stride that we talked about, but he's willing to carry the puck through the neutral zone. You know, he gets it. He recognizes that he has a little bit more time than he did maybe before. But then in those scenarios where he does need to get the puck off his stick quickly, it's in a flash. Like, that was so quick on and off his stick and in the back of the net. And that is what could make him truly a sustainable NHL player, NHL scorer. So it is exciting to see. And, you know, he's up to 4 goals and an assist in his 4 games here. I still am very confident that he will be sent back within the next game or two, which I think is going to make some people lose their minds, but it's for good reason. So actually, Curtis, I had a question about this because I know he is eligible to slide, right, to have his contract slide to next season, meaning he won't burn a year of his entry-level contract as long as he plays under 10 games. But I always thought that that was like specifically like a CHL type of thing. Is it for any player under, I guess he's technically 20 now, but he started the season as a 19-year-old. So even though he's playing in the AHL, he still can have his ELC slide a year? Right?
Correct. It's just about number of NHL games. The number of AHL games doesn't matter. He could play 70 mm-hmm. AHL games. It doesn't matter. Okay. It's just about age and number of NHL games. So he just happens to be kind of still qualify for a contract slide. And when this issue was brought up with Ron Francis over the last month or so, I mean, Francis was frank that, yeah, the team knows the situation. It's going to do what's in the best interest of the team. And that means, guarding that contract to the advantage of the team. It's, you could say Shane Wright has proven that he can succeed at the NHL level. And I wouldn't necessarily disagree with you, but I do think the best thing for him is to get back and go on a long AHL playoff run. And again, there's a pin in that, but I think getting him back in the flow with the Firebirds and on a long AHL playoff run is for the best as well.
100%. And realistically, I know there's going to be newer fans that are going to lose their minds over this when he does get sent back down, but it's 3 more meaningless games in the NHL. Let him go get reacclimated in Coachella, get playing, you know, and roll into the playoffs and just dominate. Like, he's going to go down for the playoffs no matter what, you know, whether you keep him to finish out the NHL season or not. He's going to go down for the Coachella Valley playoffs. Why not send him? It's just it's an absolute no brainer to send him down before he burns the year of his ELC. So that's that. So the pin that I wanted to pull, though, we were talking about could Cale Fleury make the team, or you kind of alluded to it. I we talked about it a little bit recently, where is there an upgrade to be made on the blue line for this team? Because I think we all are like, oh, they need scoring. They gotta get scoring, right? But like, what if they had another Vince Dunn to play on the second pair? And I think we talked about it before. Riker Evans could be that one day. He's not currently, and he's not going to be next year. He's not going to be the year after. It's going to take him a while to potentially reach that level. But like, what if they had one, you know, another real offensive puck moving defenseman on the second pair that could really help drive play? I think there's probably something to that. And I was kind of thinking through the logistics of it, you know, and right now they have, with Dunn injured, they have exactly 6 healthy defensemen right now. With Dunn back, they have 7, but that includes Justin Schultz, who's coming off the books, right? So they're going to be at 6. Then maybe you start using, I think Evans is probably a full-timer next year. So maybe you start using Brian Dumoulin as your extra, right? And now you have Now you have six, including whoever the new guy is that they bring in. I don't know. It just made me think a little bit. There might be a space for an upgrade. And then in theory, you make Brian Dumoulin as kind of that seventh guy.
I think it's an expensive upgrade that you're to upgrade somebody, you're going to pay a lot for it.
Yeah.
Anybody of significance, like you can get another, you know, Justin Schultz or whatever.
Another Justin Schultz, sure.
But at the same time, like, then you have the same dilemma, like, is Riker sit? Now, this team doesn't have a lot of offense. I mean, it has very little offense when Dunn's not in the lineup from the blue line. So I can't think of anybody. I mean, they might get somebody, but it's going to be a 6-7 defenseman, I think, just because you don't want to overpay for incremental addition and you want Riker to play. And Dumoulin, I think, has been very serviceable this year. I think he's actually played relatively well.
100%.
So, like, who would you take out if you want to get Riker in? And let's assume this new guy you slot in there automatically. But so that's why I think they'll sign somebody, but I think they're going to kind of do it on the cheap. And who knows? It could be Kale that takes that spot. So it might be somebody that needs to fight for that seventh spot in camp.
Okay.
So
I agree
right,
with everything.
Well, I hate it. I agree with everything John said.
But Darren, I like where your head's at in terms of, I think we saw how much this team struggled when Vince Dunn was out. To have another defenseman who can generate, through the neutral zone and into the offensive zone, I think has to be high on the team's to-do list. How to practically accomplish that, I think John calls out the issues very well. Any type of free agent you'd be looking at is a big contract, and then you're kind of creating a headache for yourself on the back end. But I do think it's something that the team should be thinking about this offseason for sure.
Yeah, and maybe there's a trade that we don't know about, right?
Totally.
Like, I'm not
totally
the kind of player that you'd want to get in a trade might not be one that is obviously available. So,
100%.
I don't know. Maybe there's
that.
Like, is
that I agree with you there.
Does Arizona have any good players on defense?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
But,
well, maybe there's somebody who will want to leave there. Who knows?
That's a little pin. We'll put a little pin in that.
We'll pin it. Yeah, we'll pin it. It's like kind of a big pin, but we'll pin it.
Yep.
Other Kraken related news. You mentioned Vince Dunn is still out. I did hear a rumor. I didn't see him, but I heard a rumor.
We didn't talk about the Coyote game, by the way. Speaking of which.
Oh, okay. We can do that. Yeah. Okay, then great segue.
Perfect.
They did play pretty well, although they didn't quite dominate in the way that a 5-0 score would indicate. But one thing that struck me about this game, and this isn't something that really got talked about too much, is the fact that they had six players in the lineup on ELCs. And I actually asked Haxtell about that today, and he gave a long and thoughtful response. But your whole fourth line, right? Ryan Winterton, Logan Morrison, Ty Cartier, all young players on ELCs. You had Matty Beniers, you had Shane Wright, you had Riker Evans, six players. And to me, to come away from that game, right, that feels like not necessarily like a we've thrown in the towel kind of a thing, but they have, right? And to come away from that game with a 5-0 win when you have that many young players in the lineup, I thought that was a pretty cool thing, especially when you look at, like, obviously Evans is a key part. Shane Wright scores another goal. Ugly as it was another goal. So that was cool to see, right? Matty Beniers had two assists. It's just like, all right, I'm starting to believe a little bit more in the future of this team. I still know that there needs to be patience, a lot of patience, before any of these kids start to be like the key players. But that's a pretty cool thing. That was something that really stuck out to me as I started to think about this. I was like, you know what? For them to come into a late season NHL game, yes, it's against the Arizona Coyotes, but for them to come away with a 5-0 win, a convincing victory like that, I thought that was pretty cool.
It was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. Great insight, guys.
Well,
go ahead.
So is it they had four rookies in, because I know you're saying ELC, but was there four rookies in the lineup?
Yeah, five, including Evans, because you had Wright, the whole fourth line, and Evans.
Yeah.
And Shane, Wright, Evans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the
that's
whole fourth line is five, plus Maddie, who's not a rookie,
right,
but he's
on
the
ELC. Yeah. I wonder how common that is, right, to have five rookies in the lineup. It's an interesting thing to look at. So maybe I'll look at it.
Yeah. And if only there was somebody who could pull data. Yeah.
And this one, it did get a little ugly in the second period and the third period, frankly, just in terms of giving up shot quality to the Coyotes. It felt to me like the Kraken got up 3-0 and then just let go of the rope a little bit. They just got up big and Grubauer just continued to bail them out. They didn't really get that wake-up call of you might have expected them to get by giving up a goal or two in that second period. Grubauer just made save after save. So I don't think the effort was great. I don't think the effort was on a macro scale from the team was great in any of these three games, frankly. But
Shots fired.
The Ducks and the Coyotes, their schedule recently has been so poor. This is why we were hanging on to the concept of a playoff push for so long. Schedule at the end of the year here is just dreadful.
That sucks.
And so they had they had a real chance. Anyway, they beat the Coyotes 5-0, and I didn't think they looked very good in the second or third periods. But one thing that I thought was really interesting was this Bjorkstrand, Beniers, Burakovsky first line. Line.
Because of the graphic design that the Twitter intern did.
Indeed. The Twitter intern, whoever that person may be, put their faces on three bumblebees. Were they bumblebees?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Killer bees. I think the intern probably looked for a template of three bees and didn't find too much. So they went with very cute bumblebees. But, you get the idea. Those could be mean, cute bumblebees.
Indeed.
You don't mess with them.
Yeah, bees can be dangerous, for sure. Mm-hmm.
They could be Africanized bumblebees.
I remember a couple summers ago when the team acquired Bjorkstrand and Burakovsky and Beniers was coming in as a regular, there was a thought, is this just like a top six line that you're importing onto this inaugural team? And you're just going to play them together. And that never really happened. Only played together, I think I looked it up, it was 8 or 9 minutes of ice time over the two seasons. To finally see them play together, I thought it looked pretty interesting. I'm curious what you guys thought, but that first period in particular, they had a little bit of that.
Burakovsky had one of his best games.
Yeah, they had a little bit of
really,
that.
He looked really, fast.
Yeah, they had a little, it's a different line than the rest of the team, it feels like. If you're playing those three guys together, it's more of a transition, puck possession, maybe cycling type of line that can do those things, whereas, the rest of the lineup isn't that. And I thought it kind of had an interesting look there for a little while until they got up 3-0, and it seemed like most everyone kind of packed it in for the game. But I'm curious to see if they stick with it. They've been kind of cycling through lines, getting looks at different combinations, and this might just be that. But I thought it was at least curious because their skill sets are kind of similar in some ways, but could also help each other in some ways. So it was an interesting look that we finally got, 2 years later.
I like it. Let's slot it in.
All right.
Let's slot it in next season. Let's start with them.
Well, we could pencil it.
I think Burakovsky just needs needs a little more talent around him than he's gotten at times this season. I think that's not to mention his confidence he's just getting back into playing shape right now. He's playing really well, I think, in general. Yeah. The last 10 games have probably been his best 10 games. That's not saying a whole lot. I think he's just struggled with some injuries and stuff. But when you put some talent around him, that's why I loved him with Wennberg. I thought that was going to be the start of something, and then he left. So
well, and Maddie could almost fill that Wennberg role in the sense that Maddie can cover for Burakovsky defensively. It's like, Burakovsky, you go do your thing. We want you to be you. Maddie will kind of take care of the defensive zone. And then that takes a little pressure off Maddie to be that. We were talking last time about how you need your top six center to be a 20-goal scorer, and maybe he's feeling that pressure. If that pressure is taken off of him, you're just playing with Burakovsky, who can create a lot. Maybe it just kind of comes naturally and more easily. I don't know. Again, who knows if they'll stick with it, but
yeah. And Maddie can get some cheap assists then too, which he got at least one of those last night, where I think it was the Justin Schultz goal off the 2-on-1. He ended up with the second assist and it kind of hit off his leg or something. It wasn't so he'll get those kinds of points then too. So interesting idea. And it's just so obvious. Their names all start with B. I don't know why it didn't get tried before. It's right there, but
the internet figured this out 2 years ago. Yeah,
I know. Really, kind of missed the, dare I say, boat. Another B word. I started to mention that Vince Dunn has been obviously hurt again. A rumor indicated to me that he was on the ice by himself this morning. I didn't personally see him, but that's what I hear.
Stealth mission.
Yep. Little sneaky stealth mission. And I was in there pretty early today, and he got out apparently early. So Also, Jared McCann was on the ice for practice today, so that's good. Is whatever his problem is apparently not too major. Seems like he's getting pretty close to a return. He is a full participant. So that's that. We now move on to a WHL update. Landon DuPont, he is exceptional, and that means he's probably going to the Everett Silvertips, who are the number one pick in the draft after winning the draft lottery like a week and a half ago. So, I mean, it's pretty cool when you think about who are some players that have gotten the exceptional tag. I think there's only been 9 all time in the entire CHL, and I believe Landon DuPont is the 2nd in the WHL behind Connor Bedard. So that's pretty exciting that he's going to be just up the road in Everett, playing probably not on the same pair as Caden Hamill, who's a Kraken prospect, but lots of reason to watch the Everett Silvertips coming up here in the next couple of years. Not that there wasn't already, of course. We love the Everett Silvertips. But yeah, I have a feeling I'll be making some more trips up there.
Yeah, it should be fun. So. Love it.
It should. That's pretty cool to have that right in the backyard. And speaking of Everett, they are through to the 2nd round of the WHL playoffs. They took care of Vancouver in 5 games. They actually lost game 1 at home. But then they recovered and kind of cruised to a 5-game win. So they'll now take on Portland. Portland is not going to be an easy one. Portland also swept Victoria in the opening round. So, yeah, that's going to be an interesting matchup. I'm kind of surprised to see those two teams playing each other this early on. But should be a fun one, I think, Portland against Everett. They've been two of the top teams in the U.S. division all season long. So that's that. We now go down on the farm. Moo! And speaking of CHL, Curtis, you were going to give a little update on the Kraken prospects that are playing in the CHL. A lot of them have had some success here in the early going of the CHL playoffs. I guess mostly OHL, right?
Yeah, well, it's actually all the leagues. You mentioned that Everett moved on to the 2nd round. All the leagues in the CHL, the QMJHL, OHL, and WHL, all are moving into their 2nd round of the playoffs now. And so there are 4 teams left in each of those 3 leagues remaining. And if you look at the playoff series that are left, so there are 12 playoff series left, 6 of them have a Kraken prospect in them.
How about that?
The Kraken had 9 prospects on 8 teams in the CHL playoffs. All 8 of those teams made it through to the 2nd round. So we could be looking at some deep playoff runs for some of the Kraken prospects here. Just to highlight a few, in the WHL, 3 of the 4 series we'll have a Kraken prospect. You mentioned Portland and Everett. That's Caden Hamill and Tyson Jugnauth. Moose Jaw and Jagger Furkus are taking on Swift Current. And then Kelowna and Caden Price will be taking on Prince George. Over in the QMJHL in the 2nd round.
I forgot there's a prospect in Kelowna. I always forget that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. And then over in the QMJHL, the Ryun Noranda club is taking on Victoriaville. That's Andre Loshko, and then the OHL.
You didn't say, there's no way you said that team name right.
Well, he didn't even say Huskies. Not. He could have said Huskies. We would have been like, okay, yeah.
Okay, the Huskies and Loshko. OHL, you got Sudbury taking on North Bay. That's another matchup of Kraken prospects. You got Ty Nelson and David Goyette. And then you also have Kitchener versus London. Kitchener has the Edward Schala and Carson Rakoff. So again, you got a 50-50 shot. You're just turning on a CHL playoff game at this point. You're going to see a Kraken prospect. So pretty cool.
I think that is cool. This is very similar to last year. It seemed probably the same teams in the OHL, right? Of course, Ryan Winterton was playing for London, I think, at the time. So, that was fun. It, definitely makes things interesting on off nights of Stanley Cup playoffs, but, we'll definitely check it out.
Wasn't Winterton on Hamilton? Did we just get that
wrong?
No,
he got traded to London. Last year.
Oh, 2 years ago, he was on Hamilton.
Yeah, he was on Hamilton most of his career and then traded at the trade deadline. So.
Okay. All right, hand up. That's on me. That one was on
my
me.
Bad. So. My bad. Yeah, okay.
I know
you are. It's okay.
Other farm information. The Kraken also signed a free agent goalie from... not your alma mater, but your fake alma mater that you pretend to like in University of Maine. Victor Osman, he was one of those college free agent players out there. What do you know about him? Because I think I'm willing to guess you've done some digging on him.
Yeah, so I am pretty familiar with Victor Osman. He was he's a Swedish goaltender, big guy, 6'4", You know, a Scandinavian 6'4 goaltender. That's a good start, right? But
he was manufactured at IKEA, so he's just clicked together, which is
fragile. Yeah,
never like that. Always concerning.
But. He was actually with HV71 as a junior. Then came over to Oscar Fisker Mulgaard's current team, but came over to the United States, played with the Chicago Steel for a year, and then 4 years with the University of Maine. Last year, so not this past season, but the season before that, he had a truly standout season for the University of Maine. And there was some talk that he might be like the one of the highest, if not the highest ranked undrafted college free agent once this year was over. He had a little bit of a leaky year this season, a little bit of a down year, but you can see everything that you might like in that player. I mean, he plays the kind of disciplined, big in the net style that you see from some of these Scandinavian goaltenders. So, a lot to like there. You know, he's on the Coachella Valley roster now. Possible he might get one of these last games down the stretch here, because I don't know if we'll mention it elsewhere, but, the Firebirds have clinched the Pacific Division in a first round bye already. So they don't have anything really left to play for in their last few games. So maybe he could get in there. I wouldn't bet on it necessarily, but he's definitely going to be part of the mix next year, either there or in the ECHL. So
well, what's nice about, you know, in general, if people don't know, goalies can pop a little later in their development cycle. And so there's actually a handful of undrafted goalies in the NHL. And so that's something to kind of keep an eye on as far as, you know, we won't see him in the NHL any couple of years, but if you have a couple of these bets, right, in this kind of younger age range, it's a great opportunity and could pan out. So especially when he, you know, might have just had a bad year this year and has the potential to have a good year. So
absolutely. I mean, when you look at it age wise, I mean, he's younger now than, you know, Joey Decord was a couple seasons ago when we were talking about, he can't make a save at the NHL level. Right. And right. Now look at him, you know, goalies, you know, you just look at aging curves on the various, you know, positions, and, you know, goalies peak much later than the other positions. You know, you're getting a 23 or 24 year old forward out of college. You know, you might be looking more at kind of just a depth piece there, but with a goaltender, you never know. Could be something more than that. Yeah. And he certainly has the tools. So worthwhile bet.
I know you're excited about this. Yanni Newman has made the jump. Big Yanni. You know, if he were to make the team next year, the Kraken, because I know that I think there's probably an outside shot just because he's pretty good. Do you think the Kraken can get away with having two Yannis on their team?
Yep, I think so.
Is it legal? Is that what you're asking? They're spelled different,
so it's okay.
Okay.
It's okay in the rule book.
Like, I almost feel like Yanni Newman might have to
change his name,
like pronounce his name like Janie or something, or Johnny. Maybe Johnny. Janny.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm. I don't know. Just something to think about. We might have to go by Big Yanni, Little Yanni too, because he on the plus side, he is huge. So
you're not going to mistake the two on the ice. That's for sure.
Yeah, but you might want to call Yanni Gord Big Yanni as like an irony name, nickname. So
okay, that
I do like
actually
that.
Makes a lot of sense. I do like that.
Yeah. And he's
that would be very confusing.
It's all right. Do it. You can make it happen, Darren. If you will it, can make it happen.
See what we can do.
Just call him Little Yanni.
Talk to my
Ask
people.
Big Yanni about Little Yanni, like what he sees out of Little Yanni. Little Yanni.
So Yanni Newman has been added to the Firebirds roster. He actually took warm-ups. We're recording this on Wednesday. He took warm-ups with the team on Wednesday. I don't think he's playing on Wednesday, but maybe he gets into the next game. So pretty cool.
What does he bring, Curtis?
So he's a big physical guy with a big shot. My concerns with him and watching him have been, you know, his foot speed, his mobility, and his defense. But that's, you can get a little bit more isolated and exposed on kind of the international bigger ice. And I'm just really curious to see how it translates to the NHL size ice, where he can kind of, close, you know, there isn't as much ground to cover. He can use his physicality a little more. And he still, you know, still has those offensive tools where he's kind of looking to get open and use his one timer, his, you know, huge slap shot, which is, you know, a premium asset that he has. So, I'm really curious to see how it translates. I'm also, you know, if we talked about the possibility he could be on the Kraken next year, certainly a possibility, but if he gets a full year at the AHL, you know, that this is another player that if you can work his skating a bit, You know, like this is the Ty Cartier, this is the Logan Morrison story, right? Jess Campbell and the staff down there, if they can work with him and get his skating just up to more like a, you know, acceptable level, you know, you could really have something here because he's got the stature, he's got the physicality, he's got the shot, he's got the offensive instincts, a lot to really like.
Yeah, even Shane. I mean, we've seen Shane's skating improve, in my opinion. I think it looks a lot better. So those are... Oh, and then last couple notes. Cole Lynn scored a really sick goal between the legs the other night in Abbotsford. And Leighton Rode, who we talked about recently, is another free agent signing of the Kraken from Bemidji State. He scored his first pro goal in that same game. So that was fun.
Good stuff.
Those are our... Yep, down on the farm notes. We have a You Don't See That Every Day. In the game for the Arizona Coyotes before they played the Kraken. So this was, I think it would have been like Sunday, maybe. They played the Vegas Golden Knights. They were down 3 goals going into the third period and scored 6 goals in the third to win by 3 goals. I think the final was 7-4. So you don't see that every day.
No, you don't.
Especially
you don't.
With an Arizona Coyotes team against the Vegas Golden Knights. That was... That was interesting to me. Why are you laughing, John? Why are you laughing, Curtis?
I'm just laughing at you guys. Personally, I was just thinking about how, you know, Bruce Cassidy's head was probably exploding. That was what I was laughing about. But
well, he had a quote that was pretty funny where it was like, somebody asked, like, can you guys learn from this or whatever? And he's like, learn from it. It's April. We don't need to learn anything at this point. Yeah. Like, go win the game.
I love him. He's great.
Yeah. That's our You Don't See That Every Day. We now move on to our weekly one-timers. Whoopsh. Our first weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. I can't hear you doing the sound effect, John, coming through Zoom because Zoom is muting it, but I'm assuming that your recording is picking it up and I can see your mouth moving as if you're doing it. So I'm going to assume that you just made the sound effect and it's safe for me to start the first weekly one-timer, which is an update on the Arizona Coyotes. So we did, in fact, talk about them now twice. That was a pretty good segue from You Don't See That Every Day into weekly one-timers. But taking a pin out of the thing we said earlier about I wonder if any players will want to get traded out of there. Interesting situation. As we're recording this on Wednesday night, the latest is what? Who knows more about this, John or Curtis?
I'll do it. I'll take it. Okay.
Who knows? Okay, John. Okay, so what's the latest?
So, as you said, we're recording this Wednesday evening. There was a lot, and it was a big news day for this. It started to kind of snowball and snowball and snowball, and so more stuff would come out. But I'm going to break it down. I read a little bit from Frank Cervelli, Greg Wyshynski, and Emily Kaplan from ESPN, and then some tweets here and there. But I tried to study up, so I'm trying to give them credit, but I'm not going to give credit for every single point that I hear because I'm not sure where I heard it. So... here it is. So there's been lots of chatter today, right? Alex Morello is apparently well down the path of selling the Arizona Coyotes to the Utah Jazz owner, Ryan Smith.
He's going to sell it to the league.
That's right.
And the league is going to sell it to Ryan Smith.
There's a three-party transaction. He's going to sell it to the league. Yeah. League is then going to turn around and sell it to Ryan Smith in Utah.
For a nice little profit, it seems.
Yeah, but I don't...
They call it a relocation fee.
Well, so... Apparently, Morello is getting $1 billion from the league for the team. Then they're spinning it and turning it to 1.3, selling it 1.3 to Ryan Smith. I would not.
Do you think they're going to at least install like some cheap, like laminate floors or something like that? Like when they flip a house, right? Some new cabinetry, maybe a cosmetic upgrade to the bathroom.
No. Okay. So they're not moving an arena.
Okay. All right. It's a hockey team.
So, and I would take all the figures with a little grain of salt, including the $1 billion that Morello is going to sell to the league. Sometimes those are boosted up to imply a higher value than that really is. You never know, like debt and stuff like that, how that's accounted for and what's going on there. But it sounds like the Coyotes are likely to move to Utah next season. It's not a done deal, but it sounds like there's a lot of momentum around it. And then part of the agreement that Morello is having with the NHL in the process of selling it is he's basically going to have exclusive rights to a potential new franchise expansion franchise in Arizona. And so he's still going down the path, or the organization is still going down the path of trying to win a land auction coming up at the end of the June. But even if they were to win that, they wouldn't even put a shovel in the ground for another year. And then, you know, it's another couple of years before they can even open it. So if you back up, I think this plan makes a lot of sense as long as you have willing parties, and it sounds like they do. This kind of fixes the scenario of the Coyotes' potential. Even if Morello were to get that land to build the arena tomorrow, they're still not opening that arena until 2027. And so that would mean the Coyotes would have to play at Mullet Arena for another 3 years. And
from what I've been reading, too, it doesn't seem like it's a perfect plan either. Like, there's some challenges with it. The location of it, I don't know if you saw this story, but the location of it, I guess, is kind of right on the border between, I believe, Scottsdale and Phoenix. Yeah. It's technically in Phoenix, but there's no real infrastructure. Like, there's no water or anything.
But that's I think, well, so what happened is the Scottsdale mayor kind of went after
the Coyotes. Yeah, I was like, we don't want...
No, he's like, you got to go to Phoenix for all that stuff.
Yeah.
Right, we have no water. We can't do that. And then he kind of walked it back a day later, which nobody sees because it's not as glamorous. But they would be relying on Phoenix, the Phoenix infrastructure already. And I believe the Phoenix mayor and city council is like relatively comfortable with the plan because they've already been meeting. So, but to your point, there's no guarantee they win it, right? And... they've been kicking the can down the road for so long. I think Bettman's finally like, even best case scenario, if you get that arena plan, it's 3 years down the road, right? So,
and 3 years of Mullet.
Yeah. And, you know, they've sold out all the games. The games are actually expensive, but it's a very small capacity. So I don't know the economics of everything. And so maybe it makes sense to do this from the Arizona side, from the Coyote side as well, even if they could play in Mullet for three years. I kind of like the plan. I mean, I hate the fact that it's really, you know, I was thinking about it today. Can you imagine if you're a Coyote fan, and there are Coyote fans, but you find out the last game, you only have one more game at Mullet Arena to see the Coyotes before they move. That kind of sucks, man.
Yeah, I agree.
And then, you know, there's obviously, you know, staff and personnel and, you know, players and families and all that stuff that just probably have no idea. So the faster they kind of get this plan in motion, the better. I think I've kept on seeing a date of April 18th as a potential day, which is the last day of the season, the regular season, that they might announce something more formally. Again, nothing official from the league, and you don't know, you know, who knows where this is in negotiation, but that's why I think it's been, all of a sudden it's been quiet and then got a lot of steam recently. But yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad kind of we went down to see the game at Mullet Arena, because that might be the last opportunity we'll ever get to see that. So
so one thing, I know that there was a couple of surveys done. Actually, Ryan Smith, who's the proposed new owner, he runs a company called Qualtrics. He also is the owner of the Utah Jazz. They did a survey about like what they would call a team. One thing I saw was that the most popular name is just keeping Coyotes. I wonder how they're going to handle that, though. If I were Morello, yeah. I'm sorry, I don't know how to. I would try to stipulate that, like, I want to keep that team name and branding for when I get a team back.
I think he will. That was the general consensus I got from what I read, and I think that makes a lot of sense as part of the condition of selling the franchise. And that's probably why Ryan Smith was like, hey, what should we, just to, because, I mean, they got to quickly turn and get some, if they have to change the name that quick. I mean, that's, I don't know what the Jets did. Do you know what the Jets did?
Theirs was really fast too. So,
I mean, they adopt a different name, or a name that was from the former Winnipeg Jets. So
no, but I remember, that there was like, they came up with the jerseys and the logo and everything really fast, and at first people really didn't like them. And I remember reading a story where it was like, it was the best we could do, you know, we got a team here and it happened really fast, and we did the design really quickly with minimal market research and things like that because we just didn't have the time to do it. And interestingly, they've pretty much stuck with like the same design since they moved. So
I remember having some backlash of not using the old logo and stuff, but I love the fact that they changed it. But they also could at least rely on the name, the Jets. So that took one kind of job out of the...
Totally.
You know, Qualtrics is a survey company. Do you know that, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. So Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's going to be pretty wild to relocate. And we didn't mention it, but I think we've talked about it before, or maybe we haven't. Ryan Smith does want to build a new arena for both the Jazz and this new NHL franchise, or that's quote-unquote NHL ready. And that's already kind of going through kind of the political process. So they won't, they'll open in the Delta Center if they move. They'll play in the Delta Center for a couple of years and then relocate to the new facility. So a
couple more things to throw in there. It does kind of seem like just the internal clock in the NHL, league office just ran out on this. Just kind of the thought of playing in Mullet Arena and not having a solid plan for, you know, this much longer. Like, we could be 12 months from now and there could still be, you know, no shovels in the ground, no, you know, environmental questions, all these things. So I think they just, the time kind of ran out on the Coyotes. And in, you know, from a Gary Bettman level, you can squint at this and look at how this is kind of the perfect solution, right? There's a NHL level arena in Salt Lake City that the team could play in next year. And then when Phoenix is finally ready to have an NHL facility, well, maybe an expansion team can go back. But that kind of glosses over a lot of things, including just, I just feel devastated for this fan base. I mean, they've been dealing with this for decades.
Yeah.
Then they finally, it seemed like there's, you know, like some optimism in taking various forms over the last couple of years. And now, you know, so much focus on this land auction. And then just the rug is pulled out from underneath their feet again. And it's just, it glosses over that. And it also glosses over the fact that, the arena that currently exists in Salt Lake City was not built with hockey in mind. It's not ideal for hockey. John mentioned there's plans for something new, but you don't have the ideal facility there. And you've got a metro area that's 1.2 million compared with, Phoenix, which is 4.9, right? This is it's a gamble. It's a gamble that's worked in the past, like with Nashville, for example, worked great in Nashville. But this is, you can kind of look at, you look at it, it's like, oh, this is the perfect move. But it kind of throws a fan base totally under the bus. Like, who knows if this is actually, if they're actually going to come back, because it's reliant on Morello kind of getting an arena together, which he has shown no ability to do yet, before the league will consider putting a team back there. And so, maybe that happens within 4 years and a team's back. Maybe it doesn't happen at all.
Or maybe it's somebody else, right? Maybe some other owner. Yeah. And that's one thing that, where Morello probably has that first right of refusal of a franchise in Arizona, but that's only a limited time frame. So it's probably only 5 years. And so pretty much I think this is his last shot of potentially getting an NHL franchise to play there. So something to keep an eye on. I think things will get a lot clearer in the next 2 weeks. But then Arizona's long-term future is going to be a different story. We'll figure that out by the end of June, probably.
One thing I think is really interesting, because we went to that game at Mullet, I got, I'm on their email list now, and I got an email saying, great news, we have a proposal to win a land auction. And actually, if you go on their website right now, they have a big red banner at the top of the Arizona Coyotes website. It says, breaking, Coyotes announce commitment to win state land auction and build privately funded arena. And it's like, and also, there's some other news coming. I can't help wondering if this goes through. One, how will it work in that market, to your point? I do think that, the Jazz draw pretty well, because there's not, I don't think, get the sense that there's like a ton of entertainment options in Salt Lake City. The thing that I wonder about, though, is like, how will they be able to attract players? I wonder about that. I think it's going to be a tough draw for that kind of a thing. The other thing that I wonder about is, when you tell this group of players, hey, we're moving from Phoenix to Salt Lake City, and I talked about this earlier, are there players that are going to want out of there that potentially, from a Kraken angle, could be kind of taken advantage of? You know who I always think, and I've said this before, I just think he's a perfect fit to add to the Kraken, is Nick Schmaltz. I would love to see him as a Seattle Kraken one day, but neither here nor there.
No, he's been a 20-plus goal scorer for 3 years. Nick Schmaltz,
he's like a $5.7 million player. I think he's got 2 years left on his deal. It would be a really good fit. Just throwing that out there. Our next, that was the longest weekly one-timer ever. Probably. Our next weekly one-timer. Whoopsh, I heard that one.
Okay.
Eastern Conference is a complete boondoggle. There are still like quite a few teams battling for this last wild card spot, and it seems like nobody wants it. Like they're all almost like, nah, you take it. Like, nah, you take it. Nah, you go ahead. So currently, is it the Capitals or the team that are in, I think, as we're recording this? Yeah, they have 85 points. The Penguins have pulled themselves back in by the hair on Sidney Crosby's chinny chin chin. And so they're at 84 points, as are the Red Wings. The Flyers are still right there, but they lost 9-3 to the Canadiens the other day, and they've lost three in a row. So they seem to be nosediving, which is ironic because they're called the Flyers. But yeah, interesting. I mean, it's a really, you know, I thought that the Pacific was the topsy-turvy division. I guess we're talking about conferences, but this is going to come down to the wire here in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh's got games against the Red Wings and the Islanders, right, who are also not free and clear necessarily because they're in the division spot.
Yeah, they're at 87. Yeah. So they're in the three spot, which is like that spot that you want to be in where you're not competing with teams from the other division. Yeah. But you're right, they're only 2 points clear right now.
It makes it fun, right?
It does. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of wish the Kraken were still in that scenario. They are not. Our next weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. The Women's Worlds is underway. John, I believe you have an update for us here on the Women's Worlds.
Yeah, so the quarterfinals start on Thursday. U.S. Okay. will play Japan, and Canada plays Sweden. Now, U.S. beat Canada in overtime in a 1-0 battle on Monday night. So U.S. has a top seed. Semifinal will partake Saturday, and the medal games will be Sunday. And I'm almost positive all those will be on NHL Network, even non-US teams will play. So check it out. It's good hockey. It's fun to see. Love it. And Utica, New York, by the way.
On that topic of big tournaments starting on Thursday, the men's Frozen Four also starts on Thursday. The teams that are in are Denver and Boston, so they'll play. I mean, they will probably have played by the time this podcast comes out, but they play at 4:00 on Thursday, and then Michigan plays against Boston College at 7:30. They're at the XL Energy Center in St. Paul, and they are going to have a fan fest, which is exactly where I had that incident happen on the bungee run. Remember where I pulled the bolt out of the wall and it snapped back and hit me almost in the nether regions. Yeah. So
wow,
that brings back some memories. Cool. There. Yeah. Anyway, I'm glad to not have, you know, lost.
You're with us still.
Something. Yeah. Our next weekly. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I don't know how to guide you to when I told that story on the podcast before.
Probably like episode,
because it was a really long time,
73 ago. Or something like that, I think.
Yeah, go back and start at like episode 50 and then listen up to about episode 250. And somewhere in there, you'll hear the story of when I pulled a bolt out of the wall on a bungee run in junior high at the Frozen Four. And it snapped back and hit me in the thigh area, very close to a very sensitive area. And the bruise was like the size of a watermelon. Like, it was huge. Okay, our next weekly one-timer. There's a line brawl this week. You don't see a lot of line brawls anymore, but the Rangers and the Devils had a good old-fashioned brouhaha to start the game. And this apparently was carryover because Matt Rempe wouldn't fight Curtis McDermott the last time that they played each other. Maybe it was two. Yeah, I think it was the last game that they played each other. And so all five players on the ice came out. They all ended up dropping the gloves and fighting one another. I could have sworn, didn't they put some sort of rules in place that was supposed to eliminate this thing from happening?
All those players got kicked out. Okay. So, or I should say,
that's the rule, as they all get kicked.
Eight of the players got kicked out. So, you know, think how devastating that is to your bench when you think about four less players on the.
Yeah, you lose four.
Yeah. For the whole game. So, I don't know. I mean, it's. People still love that every once in a while. It's a throwback, and it definitely had some people cheering. Getting off their seats, but this might be it for the Matt Rempe kind of tour of his inaugural tour, I should say, because I mean, I expect him to continue to play, but he might not have to fight every single game. This might mark the end where it kind of calms down from here. And so hopefully it does.
I sometimes forget that he's a friend of the pod.
Was he on the pod?
I'm pretty sure he was, because he said something. I swear he was the guy that said something like, "I'm going to go and kill everyone on Portland" or something like that.
That sounds
like
familiar now that I think about it.
He said something inflammatory.
Yeah.
Okay, our next weekly one-timer. Whoosh. Speaking of physical plays, referee Steve Cazzari had a collision with Kraken legend Hayden Fleury, and he got knocked out completely and had to get stretchered off. So it's pretty scary. There was an update to this, John, which I believe you had, correct? How is Steve Cazzari?
The NHL announced that he was doing fine, had use of all extremities, expected to make a full recovery. They didn't really get into too much more than that, but obviously scary because, I mean, I can't remember ever seeing a ref go off in a stretcher. So
no. And it was one of those where they were both looking in opposite directions and like Cazzari was kind of crossing across the middle to head towards the boards, and they just slammed into each other. So it's one of those things. Do you guys remember when I was a kid, there used to only be three officials on the ice, and the referee, there was usually two linesmen and one referee. The referee usually would not change sides. They'd stay on one side of the ice or the other. And when they went to the two officials and two linesmen, they started doing this thing where they would switch sides during the game and they'd kind of rotate around. So you see the guy that's down below the goal line is sometimes like, you know, he's behind the net, and then he'll go to the other side and the other guy will see it and switch sides, and he'll be kind of in the middle of the neutral zone. So now you do have this scenario where the linesmen are actually crossing through the middle of the neutral zone sometimes, which, you know, it's been what, 20, 30 years since they made that change. But that is, I guess, the danger and why you want to keep the officials against the boards as much as possible. But, freak thing, totally freak thing. Glad to hear that he's going to have a recovery. So
yeah.
Those are our weekly one timers. We close the show with our tweets of the week. Did either of you have a tweet of the week?
I've got one.
Okay,
got one.
John?
Mine comes from Sean Hutchin, who covers the Bruins, I believe. It's more of a quote, but it says, "Bruins Jeremy Swayman on Svechnikov's Michigan goal." Svechnikov scored another Michigan goal. Sweet. The quote is, "He's so good at that, I couldn't believe it. It was my goal to never get Michiganed. That was put in the toilet today." So I thought that was good from Swayman. So
yeah. I like that. Curtis, did you have one?
Nope. On vacation. That's fine. No tweeting.
Yeah, I'll let it slide this time. Mine comes from the Ontario Hockey League at OHL Hockey. It says, "The hashtag OHL performer of the night was Seattle Kraken prospect Edward Schala, who potted a pair of goals in Kitchener's series clinching victory on Tuesday, booking their ticket into the next round of the OHL playoffs." Not that funny of a tweet, but then they show a video down below of him scoring his two goals. And that's where you realize that the Performer of the Night award is sponsored by Fat Bastard Burrito. So he's the Fat Bastard Burrito Performer of the Night. What a prestigious honor for Edward Schala. And that made me chuckle a little bit. So
very cool.
I've seen that for a while, the Fat Bastard Performer of the Night.
Yeah. So it's so funny because it's like, it's such a classic junior hockey thing, you know, where it's like, this company came to him and they're like, "Listen, we're called Fat Bastard Burrito and we want to give you money." And the junior hockey league is like, "We will take it." We will take it and we will tweet that all the time. All the time. Every single day, we're going to tweet a Fat Bastard Performer. I don't actually know if they do it every night, but it made me laugh that's...
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
All right. That is great. We can put a little pin in this maybe for next time, but Edward Schala, playoff time, looking a little better maybe.
Yeah.
Let's come back to that.
Yeah, we'll leave it pinned. But yeah, he does seem to be coming around a little bit. It's been a little bit slower development process than I think people were hoping for him. But hey, that wraps up episode 282. I'm not going to sing an outro this time. I don't want to kill that bit. So we're going to save it. I got a request. We're going to read the review next week where there's a specific request in the review. So we'll have a song for you next week. I don't want to kill that bit though. So it might become a little bit more periodic that we do that. But yeah, that's episode 282. Thank you for our listeners. Thank you for our Patreon subscribers. Thank you for our followers. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it on next week's show. Subscribe on Spotify. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on what's the third option now? I don't remember. I haven't done this outro in a while. We'll talk to you soon for episode 283. Cheers.